With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
The big England Open Play gold drought debate, inappropriate typefaces for top-level trophy engraving, an 8 out of 10 Arsenal bromance, shirt sponsor scenes from a Canadian coffee shop, the concept of the 12th man is taken to an unprecedented new level at the darts. The Labour Party target the Super Sunday voters. Acres of time at Hampden Park. Welsh co-commentary corner. And in and around England's World Cup base camp with Gary Neville. Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 194 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me for his 125th Football Clichés appearance is Charlie Eccleshare, the Peter Shilton of this scenario. How does it feel?
Very good, yeah. Hopefully slightly less controversial a figure than Peter Shilton, but longevity-wise, delighted with that, yeah.
Yeah, longevity-wise, absolutely, yeah. In to fill the Nick Miller role this week is Nick Miller. How's it going, Nick Miller?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. It's 125, is that one of the ones where you get like a special cap?
It feels like you should.
I would have thought so.
Yeah.
Yeah, you give something of 100, but 125 also feels quite royal too. You are on mere cap 42. I say mere, that's David Batty, Owen Hargreaves, Peter Crouch, Danny Welbeck territory. Not insignificant figures.
No, I would have guessed more for Batty, but yeah, happy with that. Much like Batty, I'm going to fade into the background when my time on the Clichés podcast is done and not be contactable to anyone wanting to interview me.
Your time on the Football Clichés podcast will never be officially done. It's been a while, actually, but you've been busy, of course. You've been editing the forthcoming Totally Football book, which is out in early October, I believe.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, Adam. Thank you. Yes, it's out on the 6th of October. It is a collection of excellent writing based on the kind of idea of where football is in 2022, and both yourself and Charlie, of course, have written things for it. You've written something about the sort of concept of Frank Lampard, football manager, and Charlie's written about Son Heung-min.
Yeah, it's really good to get closure on Frank Lampard, but Charlie, is the main thrust of your Son Heung-min epic that he's an underrated player? Because that's dangerous territory to get into, suggesting that a player might be underrated.
It is, and I was. I did feel like a bit of a hostage to fortune because I was slightly fearing throughout the summer that, you know, some big, massive super club would come in and make a £200 million bid and slightly undermine the whole premise. But they didn't, so hurrah.
And Lampard did get sacked, so we're all safe. So yeah. We should get paid, right? It'd be fine.
I was very relieved that when he scored a hat-trick the other week, because the way the start of the season was going was going to make that piece look a little bit silly. But yeah.
That's true, Thank you, Sonny. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. You're in live-ish topical territory here. Nothing could become outdated unless we start talking about England versus Germany, which is happening tonight. And, well, people already know what happens. But on the subject of England, Charlie, they've been relegated from League A, I believe, of the Nations League. And Gareth Southgate doing some very convincing club-style, ominous pre-sacking chat. Talking about his contract and how that doesn't necessarily keep him safe. He'll be all he's doing now is focusing on a good performance in the next game. He knows he's going to be judged on results. I think all we're missing here is, well, that's a question you'll have to ask the FA. I feel like it's amazing just, you know, how little we kind of hear of club language in international football, but that's where it's going. He's offering a real sort of beleaguered manager chat here.
Yeah, is that because it's almost like elections being an international manager, that you just, you know, if you get bombed out early or lose an election, you're going. There are sort of more kind of obvious points at which it's going to happen. I mean, obviously you can be sacked between cycles, as they're called, but ultimately, if you do badly in the World Cup, you're off.
Yeah.
I mean, do votes of confidence, do they happen at international level?
Well, who would they come from? I'm trying to go...
I guess the FA in this case.
Yeah, I'm less aware of who runs English football than I've ever been. Is it Bert Millerchip still? I don't know. Who is
Adam
Southgate's
Crozier.
Boss?
Yeah.
Nobody knows. But one thing is, I think it's fair to say England are in poor form, Nick. But there are some technicalities at play here. Jack Pitbrook reports from the England press pack and says there is some debate about how long England's open play goal drought actually is. Common consensus is that it stretches back to last November and the 10-0 dismantling of San Marino. But Tyrone Mings headed home a Phil Foden corner for England's third goal in the 3-0 win over Ivory Coast in March. Does that not count as open play? Instinctively, Nick, I say no.
Interesting. Well, no, I would say that does count as open play. I would have said non-open play goals are penalties and goals directly from free kicks. I don't know.
I think in the spirit of it, I feel like a header from a corner shouldn't count, Charlie, as open play, because it's part of a set piece, right? And I think spiritually it shouldn't count.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think the waters might have been muddied a bit by the growth of non-penalty goals, which has really infiltrated kind of even the non-data heads speak. But yeah, I think traditionally I wouldn't think any set piece goal is from open play. But I do wonder now with non-penalty goals.
But I think they're serving different functions. Non-penalty goals is you're still having to create the chances, and set-piece chances are still technically part of that. But in terms of free-flowing, open football, but you know, in terms of chance creation in that sense, Nick, heading home a corner, it doesn't really count, does it? I think this is important. Should heading home from a corner count as open play? If so, why?
Well, because it's an open play, isn't it? But well, I mean, are we going to get into some sort of murky phases of play areas here? Because
yes, we are.
Not corner comes in, it's headed out someone on the edge of the area, shoots and scores. What's that?
Open play.
That's open play. Oh, okay.
So you're saying so it's first phase set piece,
right?
Yeah,
isn't open play.
Well, because I think, I would say no. I think it's the direct plan of the corner is to find someone who heads it home, and that could, any team could do that. I think is the kind of the implication here. But phases of play are quite distinct. It's not a particularly tricky thing to identify, Charlie. So I think we could do it this way. As soon as that corner is cleared, then it becomes open play.
Yeah, as soon as it becomes another phase. Mm. But I think it is. It feels right in this instance because everyone knows the point that's being got at, which is that Southgate's England are really not very fluid, that they score a lot of set-piece goals. So I can see why people want that not to count, because it helps illustrate a point people want to make.
The idea, Nick, that this might have split the England press pack is quite funny. I'd love to know who's on either side of this debate, but it does make me think of... Imagine the Graham Taylor press conference with Rob Shepherd back in the early 90s and them banging on about whether it counts as an open play goal. You can kind of imagine it in The Impossible Job.
Rob Shepherd just goes, I just worry, Graham. I just worry about the phases of play.
Don't worry, Rob. It's open play.
I mean, it is a good...
I went all Mavis from Coronation Street there. I don't know why.
I think that works, though. I think Graham Taylor, there was an element of Mavis to him. So,
But I can see why there needs to be a sort of widespread agreement. Because you're almost, you know, you're scooping each other if you're like, oh yeah, no, it's not since March. And then you come in with the November. You need to have consistency.
Yeah, it should be a tightly knit group. I'm sad to hear of this rift
amongst them. Next up, this is very curious. I'd love to know what you think about this. Pavel Adamek writes in, says, "Hi Adam, I thought this could be of potential interest. I visited the Camp Nou recently. I'm a graphic designer and I couldn't help but notice that loads of the trophies in their trophy cabinet had their text engraved in the font of none other than Comic Sans, including the La Liga and Copa del Rey major trophies.
Wow.
Which is insane because it's a ship font and a bizarrely inappropriate choice for this purpose. So I had a little look and it does turn out, Charlie, that the Copa del Rey itself, it's engraved in Comic Sans.
By the way, I've never heard Comic Sans, which is probably... Yeah, Comic Sans.
Why? Why is it Sans?
Don't know, it just is. I mean,
that's how you pronounce Sans, right?
You did, in any other context, yes. It's a weird...
Well, why would you say Sans here?
I don't know.
You're
francophoning it.
Yeah, you're saying it as if it's French. Is it a French invention, Comic Sans?
Comic Sans.
Okay, well, how do you say... Does that mean you say sans serif then?
Yes, I would say sans serif. Yeah, in a font context, a fontext. Sans.
Well, this is way off the beaten path here.
I mean, this
isn't quite my segue Sieg embarrassment, but if I'm continental, so be it. But anyway, how do you feel about said font being used for a trophy, Charlie? I mean, I wouldn't even accept it at under 13s level.
I'd be so disappointed that I'd worked so hard for something and it was so devalued. Mm. It screams Mickey Mouse.
Also, I mean, that's like a conscious choice as well, because surely just doing it in a kind of sort of fairly standard way is easier for the engraver. For Comic Sans looks like a slightly more... Mm. What I would think a slightly more difficult thing to engrave on silver. So who's decided this? Like, and this is an active decision.
Is that what's that got Javier Tebas, who's always shooting from the hip and being controversial? Is this another one of his ideas?
Yeah, this is definitely a marketing stunt, isn't it? But it seems to go back years and years. This isn't a relatively modern thing. I mean, it's not a very modern font either. But interestingly, Nick, the inventor, the designer of the font originally, Vincent Connard, has had to defend this font quite a lot, just because it's become infamously shit, hasn't it? Of course, almost ironically so. And he defended his font in the sort of almost like Alex Ferguson defending his signing of Juan Sebastian Varane. He says, "If you love it, you don't know much about typography. But if you hate it, you really don't know much about typography either. And you should get another hobby." Spirited defense of Comic Sans.
Real user all fucking idiot stuff there, isn't it?
That is punchy.
So what is he arguing there, that it's just mediocre then?
I guess so.
Yeah, sounds like that.
He went on to say that Comic Sans does what it was commissioned to do. It's loved by kids, mums, dads and many family members. So it did its job very well. It matched the brief.
I can see his frustration there, because he's like, yeah, obviously don't use it on the Copa del Rey. That's not on me. I designed it for kids.
Damn right. Okay then. So I'm not sure what your base of knowledge here is with established typefaces, Nick. What font should be used on a trophy? Times New Roman would be fine, right?
Yeah, probably. Helvetica, the design classic. That would look quite nice, I think. Mm.
Impact.
Your
would
aerials,
be a bit
Calibris, they're sort of
standard.
Yeah,
I'm not sure about aerial. Yeah, that would trouble me. It's not grand enough, is it?
Maybe.
Should have asked. Should have put this in a tweet before we recorded. It would have been a cracking bit of engagement, that would have been. Anyway, next up. Love, love, love this. This is Arsenal's backup goalkeeper, Matt Turner, talking about the relationship he struck up with Takahiro Tomiyasu.
I'm really looking forward to getting to play against Super Tomiyasu. He's just like such a great person. He's such a great guy to be around. We eat meals together from time to time. I'll see him in the locker room and say, "Hey, Tommy, let's go get some food." And he's always down for that. So he's just like an 8 out of 10 person. You know what you're going to get from him every single day.
The best thing about this, Johnny, is that we talked about this recently, about what positions kind of lend themselves to being 7 out of 10 every week. And in a football context, it is generally considered to be a compliment, a qualified compliment. In this sense, it doesn't sound like one at all. You know what you're going to get from every single day. An 8 out of 10 person. I wouldn't be happy with that.
That is, yeah, putting such a ceiling on someone's personality. That's brilliant, especially as he is such a... exactly the kind of player who would be described as, you know what you're going to get from him, sort of 7 out of 10 each week, sort of solid fullback. I've never heard someone's character described in that way. That's superb.
I mean, 8 out of 10 is not bad, Nick, but are these the sort of people you want in your life?
What, you mean you don't want someone who describes you as 8 out of 10? Or you?
No,
someone...
sorry, I'm talking about the 8 out of 10 people themselves. Are these the sort of consistent presences you really need? Maybe you do. Maybe
yeah,
you do.
I think I'd take an 8 out of 10, certainly. Well, but the other thing about that was that he in describing their deep personal relationship, he said, sometimes I say, do you want to get some food? And sometimes he says yes. I mean, it's not... It doesn't speak to a kind of deep personal bond, does it?
80% of the time he says yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in a little window into the world of Premier League dressing rooms, Charlie, about how these friendships are struck up. Matt Turner turned to Tomiyasu once and just said, "Chance, you're getting some lunch?" And that was it. That was it. A bromance was born.
8 out of 10 is actually pretty good. Yeah. I mean, I think 7 out of 10 really would be damning someone with faint praise. 8 out of 10, week after week.
Yeah,
there's definitely room for that.
There's
definitely room for that in your group of friends. Someone who, you know, just a solid... presence. He's going to be there, although not always there if he's not always saying yes to lunch. But
turns up at the pub broadly on time.
Yeah, exactly. Just reliable.
But the 8 out of 10 will be occasionally has an amusing story. Is that, you know, not conversational dynamite, but
yeah.
On a stag do, he will start chatting to like the father-in-laws.
Yes.
Or whatever, just to get the chemistry going between people who don't know each other. That's 8 out of 10 behaviour.
Yeah, at a wedding, you can stick him next to a cousin who no one really knows and he'll do a job.
Play him anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
No, this is good. I do like it. This is good. That is 8 out of 10 behaviour. This, however, is 2 out of 10 behaviour. This is from Joshua Hughes. I had a bizarre exchange at a Toronto coffee shop where a cashier asked if I was wearing a Man U jersey as a fan of the team or Chevrolet's cars before noting that a mate of his had a collection for this reason. Is there a sponsor in history that would render this behaviour acceptable? No, first of all, Charlie, what a bizarre thing to ask. I mean, game's gone.
That is, to answer that question, the only thing could be a retro kit that a brand has become especially cool over time. Or weren't there were those films, weren't there, on the Atletico shirt?
Yes.
Were any of those films particularly cool or good?
That's a good question.
What Hellboy was one of them is the one that sticks in my mind. So if you're a big fan of...
If you loved Hellboy, you might be like,
Azerbaijan, cool. Land of Fire, if you're particularly passionate about
If you like
country.
Fire.
No, I didn't really consider the sort of ironic growth of a sponsor becoming, I don't know, Müller yogurts, I don't know.
Brother, if you loved those photocopiers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Saw them at your school and thought, yeah, they're 8 out of 10 each week. Good job.
I still don't think we're any closer, Nick, to an acceptable sponsor to wear... just for that reason.
No, there was that thing that was going around a little while ago about which sponsors like enhance the shirt rather than just being ugly things. And I think the closest anyone came to that was the Newcastle Brown Ale kind of star thing. But even then, I'm not sure that's, you know, your Newcastle Brown Ale ultras are not necessarily going to be buying Newcastle shirts just for that, are they?
Yeah, I mean, brand loyalty is very much at the heart of this, Charlie. So alcohol could work. I don't know if we're allowed to say this, but it is inherently cool for some people, so that could work in this scenario.
If they, have Guinness sponsored back in the 80s or something, there must
QPR.
Be like a cool retro shirt, did they? Okay,
and that was a really nice shirt as well, actually.
Yeah,
so that could work.
So something like that.
Okay, that's fine.
Or
if
you were this way inclined, UNICEF, going sort of the other way, if you know you really like their work and didn't just want to wear a UNICEF t-shirt.
Maybe the no smoking West Brom kit from the late 1980s. Really standing up for your principles, but no matter whose team displayed it on their shirts. Okay, one round slightly, but Joshua Hughes, worrying scenes for you.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure.
You got this. Adidas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
This is sensational. Nick, the trajectory of the 12th man concept on this podcast has had, well, it has had quite the trajectory. We've talked about 12th men, 13th men. At a WWE event the other day, we had the 68,000th man. So it got steadily more and more ridiculous, is what I'm saying. And then this is a whole new level entirely. This is from Tom Clancy, who was watching the darts from Belgium the other day. Andrew Gilding versus home favourite Dimitri Vandenberg. And this happened.
But maybe that's the first sign of weakness from Andrew. In these games, you're allowed to have a couple of dodgy visits, but these kind of crowds are going to let you know if it's in their favour or not.
Yeah, they're trying to be the fourth dart. Vandenberg encouraging him.
I will not have this, Nick. I will not have fourth dart. I will not have the concept moving to equipment. It's wrong.
It brings up a sensational image of someone running from the crowd to the hockey and throwing themselves at a double ten or something like that.
Really pointy head.
Yeah, yeah. Just pointing like their pointing their finger. Does that count? No. No score.
I didn't even really detect any particular sense of irony there, Charlie. It felt like it was a genuine concept in darts. It may well be.
It may be. Mm. It may be. Mm. No, I definitely didn't think there was any irony in it. Mm. That's what I mean. No. It would be such an amazing bonus to have a fourth dart. It would really change the game. Ludicrous.
Well, Dimitri Vandenberg, I can confirm, didn't take advantage of his fourth dart. He lost to Andrew Gilding in Belgium. So jury remains out on that concept in darts. But if anyone out there fancies coming to be our fourth man in London, Manchester or Dublin, now and for the next 6 weeks is your chance. Just go to myticket.co.uk or just Google Football Clichés Live if you're feeling pretty carefree. Tickets still available. And we are going to have one hell of an evening times three across the British Isles. Right, next up, unconfirmed reports. I don't have a clip for this and I'm devastated. Unconfirmed reports, Charlie, that in the brief moments between speakers at the Labour Party conference this weekend, they were playing Stop This Flame by Celeste. It's fucking everywhere. Absolutely everywhere.
Oh, I need to hear that. That is so good. Oh,
can you imagine?
I can see why. I mean, it does... We talked about the sort of songs being written for that purpose, and there's something chemically in it that just, it works.
Nothing really literal in there, Nick, that works necessarily, I don't think. But maybe they just picked it because they just thought people would, you know, in the depths of their brains, have an instant connection.
Well, the kind of the Pavlovian association with a pleasant Sunday afternoon or something.
Mm. You know. Regaining the premiership, I don't know. But
Clichés alumnus Keir Starmer, a big football fan, so maybe he might have insisted on it.
I would like to think so. Celeste must be rolling in royalties right now from all sorts of random places. Anyway, Oisin McKearns writes in and says he was watching Scotland versus Ireland on RTE and Ireland pouring out on the counter attack, and he said Stephen Kelly on co-coms said that Troy Parrott had acres of time, Charlie, to score a 1-1, which he didn't. Then convert. Incredible scenes, really.
Yeah, I feel like we've heard this before at some point, and you can see how it happens. But it's an interesting concept, acres of time.
I mean, once again, it works, Nick. I mean, it's technically completely incorrect, but the footballing space-time continuum, I think, will actually allow it. Acres of time, I can picture the scenario, can you?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, as we've said a number of times on this podcast, you know what he means, so it's kind of probably fine.
And it's not a cop-out. This is an important thing. This is how language should behave. People get the thing slightly wrong, but everyone else still understanding. But I did want to kind of formalise all of this. So in last week's sister column for the Football Clichés podcast, It Is What It Is, I came up with a proper quantification of footballing spaces, beginning with half a yard. Now, Charlie, I want to sort of stress test this scale with you guys. First of all, half a yard. I argue that the proverbial half a yard is actually more than half a yard. When you think of a striker, it just needs that half a yard. I'm thinking it's actually four square yards. That's a sort of size of area of turf is what we're operating in here.
What, to shift it, to have the space to shift the ball and get the shot away?
Yeah. Yeah. If you think of that as a 2D area, you need more space than just half a yard, right?
That wouldn't work.
No, agreed. So that means, Nick, that a yard, you know, just giving himself that yard, I put it as 9 square yards, 3x3.
Sure. That's kind of makes sense. I mean, how far are we going with this? Is this area is going to expand exponentially until it fills the whole pitch?
Yeah, they will. Don't worry, the tempo does begin to pick up. Nick, I'll stay with you then. A pocket of space, which was the original query from Samuel Owens, who asked, wanted to know how big a pocket of space actually is. And I said, well, if you use your cultural capital for this, and the only time we ever hear about pockets of space is on Match of the Day, when they draw a little diagram around a player to see how far away he is from his supposed markers on the other team, I put it at about 50 to 100 square yards.
Wow.
So it's a sizable chunk of the middle of the pitch. So 10 by 10, I'd say, is not even that big, is it really? 10 by 10 square, you could find yourself in that. That's a pocket.
I suppose so. I mean, I don't think of pocket of space quite so much in the size of the space. It's more that the player is kind of technically enclosed by players on either side, but there's
between the lines, maybe.
Yeah, there's an area of space that in which he has room to work, rather than necessarily putting a number on it, which I know is not the point of this section. But
yes, indeed. Charlie, do you agree with this? Do you think pockets of space just simply cannot be quantified?
No, I think you know one when you see one.
Yeah, exactly.
You do need to have. They can't be too small. I think that is important, because the skill of them is that you've managed to find this, that it's actually a reasonably big area, despite the fact that there should be lots of players around, or there are lots of players dotted not far,
exactly.
But you sort of isolated this little area.
Which is why I think 7x7 to 10x10 is the sort of range we should be working within here. But trust me, these things get bigger. Charlie, next up is all kinds of room, which is a favourite of a commentator. It's similar to all kinds of problems that a team are posing a fullback. I put this at 100 to 300 square yards, so multiple pockets put together, all kinds of space, which is usually out wide. Because you wouldn't get all kinds of space room in the middle, and maybe all kinds of space to shoot. Maybe
could you get it in a set piece if someone's unmarked that they've got
all kinds
and he's
of room.
Just there in all kinds of room? But I'm not sure.
I think you need to have the ball at your feet.
Yeah, maybe.
I think you can. All to me, all kinds of space implies that the rest of the defence is distracted by something else. So they've left all kinds of room for someone else to, yeah. So it's like a player on one wing and there's a crossfield pass or something along the lines, or a set piece where everyone goes to the near posts, the ball goes to the far post, and he's in all kinds of room at the back post to head in.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Maybe it's more versatile than I thought. Then I'll have to rethink that one. Next up, the very contentious end of the scale was which is bigger, an ocean or an acre? In footballing sense, I said an ocean of room is smaller. It's 300 to 400 square yards. Whereas an acre of space, or sorry, acres of space, plural, because you never have a single acre, is 400 to 1500 square yards. So acres are more than oceans, Nick, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's just one of the many ways in which the magic of the language of football just completely overcomes the real world, really. Because, as we know, Oceans are bigger than acres, but not on a football pitch.
Exactly. What I also thought clinched this, Charlie, is a lot of co-commentators would say he's in absolute acres, which I think pushes it over the edge to being bigger. Absolute acres.
You could say absolute oceans, could you?
No, it doesn't work. Doesn't work.
That sounds weird.
Would either of you care to guess what the largest area possible in a football pitch is? Talked about it on this podcast before. You can only do it away from home.
Not swathes.
Nope.
Can you do it? Oh, the Freedom Of.
The Freedom of Stadium X, which is 1,500 to 2,500 square yards. That is all the way up to one whole half of a football pitch, a la Fernando Torres against Barcelona in 2012. That was the Freedom of the Camp Nou. So I formalised it. I've done it. I fixed it.
That's great. And you're excluding there, obviously, the sort of ridiculous, you know, he's got the Freedom of Tyneside.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. I wasn't sure if you could introduce sort of vague geographical areas. I thought that was just for the weather at the start of a game. But that is a good observation. Maybe I should have included that. Right, next up. Ears open for this one. This is from Mehdi George. And thanks also to Emma Davis for the translation help. This was Belgium versus Wales the other night on S4C. Can your pairs of ears and brains... No, that's... two ears each. can your collective ears and brains pinpoint the moment that S4C's Owen Tudor-Jones switches from a standard piece of co-commentator analysis to spotting Thierry Henry on the touchline?
Weithiau, just come at Ian Bass. Just I newid yr ongl. Hyrwydd mae cael Ian Bass berffaith o'r ongl yna. O, ni'n mynd drwy'r chwriw, nag oedd. Gwyd beth fod o'n chwarae'n ebyn heno.
Ro'n nhw pob man, yma oedd.
I mean, we shouldn't be surprised that it is the same style of speech, Charlie, but it is, and it's wonderful. You just don't even need to know the words. You know what's happening.
Fantastic. Have we got a translation?
Yes, absolutely. So there's a bit of chat about how it just needs just one pass sometimes, just one pass. And then the camera pans to Thierry Henry. This guy wasn't a bad player, was he? Thank God he's not playing against us tonight.
Does the kind of cross-cultural, cross-language... co-commentator's deep chuckle there as well from whoever that was.
Yeah.
Unmistakable.
Perfectly played. It's exactly the same intonation. It really is wonderful. But yeah.
If I said this, I probably have, but I can sort of see the... now that I'm at an age where former players who I watch are managers, I do find myself saying this to... Like, if I'm watching with my wife or something, I'd be like, oh, you know, he was a really good player. It's like... I don't know why I feel the compulsion to do it, but there's something that I find quite satisfying about the football circle of life happening, that these guys who we used to watch are now, yeah, no, he was good. Yeah, midfielder. Yeah.
Is it just a really sort of really low-key way of showing off your football knowledge? Is it sort of your brain simply won't allow you not to acknowledge that you know who that is?
Yeah, I don't know. You're like fighting every urge to point it out. Mm. That's just not that interesting.
It's a great phenomenon.
I tend to do it if it's like someone who... used to play for Forest, or there's some kind of connection, which I think is a sort of subconscious way of justifying why this match that I have otherwise no emotional involvement in is taking up valuable TV time.
Yeah. That reminds me, actually, I don't know if we've ever discussed this in our very, very lengthy discussions about what a player he was, by the way, but whenever there's a kind of a group of ex-pros who appear on the screen during a game, and the co-commentator mentions, say, 3 out of 4 of them, and in your brain you go, no, I know that one. He's not as famous, but I know him too. Are they going to mention his name? They don't. And it's like, wow, got it. I know it. So, it's all about ego, really, at the end of the day. Next up, this is from Ipswich Town's official Twitter account during their 2-1 defeat to Plymouth at the weekend. 87 minutes. Jackson's strike from 25 yards out sails inches wide. Nick, I don't want... shot sailing inches wide.
I think we covered this a couple of months ago, maybe. Sailing is all, obviously, sailing's always over, and it's never inches, surely. Mm.
I mean,
nautical miles.
I mean, in terms of the flight of the ball, Charlie, I'm not dead against it, but the implication of the word sails is that it's high, wide, and handsome, isn't it?
Yeah, I took the words right out of my mouth. High, wide, and handsome.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a sort of, I don't know, like a droopiness or something to it. So I don't think it doesn't quite work. Whistling wide, that's what it should be.
Yeah, it should be whistling. Yeah, almost regardless of the trajectory, it should be whistling. Right, this is great. This is via Greg Evans, who noted the Notts County in-house commentator describing West Brom loanee Kevin Castro's debut free kick wonder goal at York City this weekend.
Kevin Castro is shaping like he's going to shoot. He is going to shoot.
Get it! Oh! Oh my word, what a goal from Kevin Castro! 4 minutes into his first start as a Notts player, and it's flipping mental!
Wonderful delivery at the end, but I don't know, it's almost slightly Goldbridgian delivery of it, Nick.
Yeah, it feels like he was going to look, because what you won't be able to, people won't be able to see is to celebrate. He did a flip, so it feels like it's very much kind of say what you see. Yeah. You know, trying to tie it in a little bit too neatly. I don't know.
Yeah, the flip celebration ruins it for me, Charlie, because there is therefore that spectre of the idea that he might have been sort of some sort of literal reference, but it doesn't feel like one the way it's delivered. I think that's all the words he could muster, and that's fine.
Well, yeah, I don't know, because that's out of the commentator's handbook. You know, you use what's around you. Do you think he's about to swear and then has to stop himself?
No, I just.
You think he just doesn't really know where to go with it?
I have the image of this guy as quite PG by nature, whoever it is, and flipping mental was the only thing that came to his head. Brilliant. Really loved it.
It feels more like a kind of very basic like newspaper headline with the, you know, you got,
yes,
you got the big picture of him mid air or mid flip. That's that. It's more that than a commentator's line, I think.
Yeah,
flipping neck.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, still wonderful delivery. Right, I want to end this week with a clip from Gary Neville's visit to Qatar for Sky to give a behind the scenes tour of England's base for the World Cup, the Souk Al Wakra Hotel. So he has a little stroll around, Charlie, looking at the facilities in a really kind of vague kind of way. I can reassure you that it is hidden away from the public, so they won't be pestered. They will be able to kind of get away from it all. There was no signs of any pool tables or anything, so there might be a slight Rustenburg situation going on here in terms of them being bored. I'm worried about that. But all those details went out the window right at the end when Neville began to air his concerns about the local culture.
You think about the local prayers that are occurring now, and that will happen during the World Cup, won't it? And at what times of the day will local prayers take place?
Five times of the day.
Five times of the day? Yeah. In the morning, is it?
In the morning, and then you have in the afternoon.
And so what time is the first one in the morning?
Morning, as of now, it's 5 a.m.
5 a.m.?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I mean, I love it, the idea of this sort of, you're surrounded by local culture and traditional setting that we've got. But at 5 o'clock in the morning, the players will obviously hear the prayers, and that'll be interesting to see how they maybe, you know, deal with that. But that's where we are. We're in Qatar, and it is going to happen, and should happen. Obviously, don't stop for the England team.
The idea that it's a bit like fans letting off fireworks outside the window, Charlie. They're just going to have to get used to it. This is how things are done in this country. They're just going to have to adapt. And how will they adapt? Will it affect their preparations?
Until that last bit, I was genuinely expecting him to kind of go, any chance he could have a word and just like get him to
at least turn it down a bit,
because you know, Kieran Trippier is trying to get a bit of shut eye in there, and you know,
well, we joke about this, but Charlie, I'm concerned this is going to be a very problematic entry into the England failure long read, is that the players were disturbed by the morning prayers in Al Wakra.
You can imagine the sort of Sky Sports News reporter stationed outside the hotel at 5 a.m. reporting, like, this is the scene live, as you can hear. I'm miles away, and that's pretty loud. So a lot of the players are going to be waking up right now.
Good thumb pointing for you. That is elite level again from you. The idea, Nick, the Gary Cottrell out there with his sound meter saying, well, it is loud.
Cottrell will surely go to the mosque to, you know, to hear the call to prayer, and it's, you know, right up close and personal.
Didn't have this problem in Baden-Baden, did they?
You bloody love Baden-Baden, don't you?
I am contractually obliged to mention it in once in every five podcasts. Lovely place.
I saw Baden-Baden mentioned in a non-2006 World Cup context. I can't remember what it was. It was absolutely astonishing. It was like, what? It kind of exists outside of that vacuum. It was amazing.
It's lovely German cuisine. It's wonderful baths, both the ancient Roman ones and the modern ones. Lovely place to go. And cheap flights as well. And great walks up the hills and the mountains. And one of the best funicular railways I've ever been on, I can confirm.
High praise.
Maybe I heard it from you.
Yeah, get yourself to Baden-Baden. On that note, thanks so much, Nick Miller, for a triumphant return to the adjudication panel.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Charlie. 125 not out.
Thank you very much.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back on Thursday. See you later.
The Athletic.